just want you to be ready. You hear what I said? I want you to be ready. Yes, there are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have left their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights. But the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Yes. Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the South to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold. But the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that, he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold! My God! Through the parka's fold, it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd close, then the lashes froze until sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun. But the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed, and the stars overhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me, and, "Cap," says he, "Cap, I'm going to cash in this trip, I guess. And if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. And then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold. And it's got right hold till I'm chilled clear through the bone. Yet tain't being dead. It ain't being dead. It's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that, foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains." Well, a pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn. But God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before that night, a corpse was all that was left of poor old Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death. And I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brain and your brawn, but I promise true, and it's up to you. Yes, sir, you promised. It's up to you to cremate these last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid. And the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb and my heart, how I cursed that load, in the long, long night by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring howled out their woes to the homeless snows. Oh, God, how I loathed that thing, sitting there on the sled. And every day, that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow, and on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low, the trail was bad, and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in, and I'd often sing to the hateful thing. And it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake LaBarge. And an old derelict boat lay. It was jammed in the ice. But I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it. And I thought a bit. And I looked at my frozen chum. Then, "Here," said I with a sudden cry, "here is my crematorium." Oh. Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel higher. The flames just soared. And the furnace roared, such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal. Yeah. And then I stuffed in Sam McGee. Well, then I turned around and I made a hike. For I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind seemed to blow harder and harder. It was icy cold, and the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I didn't know why. And the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down that frozen sky. I don't know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked. It's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide, and there sat Sam, looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile you could see a mile. And he said, "Please close that door. Please close that door. It's fine in here. But I greatly fear that you're going to let in the cold and the storm. Friend, since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, it's the first time, the first damn time I've been warm." There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights. But the queerest they ever did see was at night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Okay? Okay, gang? So if you think that you're cold out there with the energy shortage, think some nights of Sam McGee sitting in that fiery furnace, looking up. Now, do you want to hear another one? Did you like that one? All right, listen, here's the classic of them all. I'm going to do this one. I have to do it. Once a year I do this, maybe twice a year. And I just got to do this. This is one of my favorite poets, Robert W. Service. By the way, what does the W stand for? All right. This was written in 1902, and it almost instantly became world famous. And as a matter of fact, is probably more honored in Europe than it is here, because we tend to take Service rather lightly. But in Europe, he's much more seriously regarded as a guy who really cataloged the frontier in poetry. The curious raw... Now, the frontier he was cataloging was not the Gary Cooper frontier of Tombstone, Arizona, but the frontier of Alaska, which was really exotic to the Europeans. Completely a wild... And it still remains that. You know, the funny thing, I was in Alaska 2 years ago, and a lot of what he talks about still remains in Alaska. For example, names. Now, all of us here, you know, we have names. And rarely do we have nicknames, unless it's a play on our own name, like somebody would be called Phil or Marty. But up in Alaska, guys still have names. Like, for example, I met a guy called Whiskey Bill. That's all I call him, Whiskey Bill. Yeah, Whiskey Bill. And nobody thought anything about it. And there are names are given to people like that. You have to understand, when he uses a name like that, he's not talking about something that doesn't exist. It's true and it's real. A bunch of the boys were hooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. Now, if that isn't one of the most famous lines in all of American literature. Don't worry about it, Jerry. I'll give them the cue for the music. Same music. Don't worry about it, man. A bunch of the boys were whooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. Now get ready get your piano set up. You don't have to cue it up. Now just play it easy and bring it in nice and soft when I give you the cue. A bunch of the boys were hooping it up in the Malamute Saloon. The kid that handles the music box was hitting a jag-time tune. And back at the bar, in a solo game, sat Dangerous Dan McGrew. And watching his luck was his lady of love, his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou. Night, which was 50 below, and into the din and the glare there stumbled a miner fresh from the creeks, dog dirty and loaded for bear. He looked like a man with a foot in the grave and scarcely the strength of a louse, yet he tilted a poke of dust on the bar and he called for drinks on the house. And you know, there was none could place the stranger's face, although we searched ourselves for a clue, but we drank his health. And the last to drink was Dangerous Dan McGrew. Now there's men that somehow just grip your eyes and hold them hard like a spell. And such was he. And he looked to me like a man who had lived in hell, with a face most hair and the dreary stare of a dog whose day is done. As he watered the green stuff in his glass and the drops fell one by one, and then I got to figuring who he was and wondering what he'd do. And I turned my head, and there watching him was the lady that's known as Lou. His eyes went rubbering around the room, and he seemed in a kind of daze. And at last, that old piano fell in the way of his wandering gaze. The ragtime kid was having a drink, and there was no one else on the stool. So the stranger stumbles across the room and flops down there like a fool. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat. And I saw him sway. Then he clutched the keys with his talon hands. My God, but could that man play? Were you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear and the icy mountains hemmed you in with a silence that you could almost hear, with only the howl of a timber wolf, and you camped there in the cold, a half-dead thing in a stark, dead world, clean mad for the muck called gold? While high overhead, green and yellow and red, the northern lights swept in bars. Well, then you've got just a slight hunch what that music meant. Hunger and night and the stars. And hunger, not of the belly kind that's banished with bacon and beans, but the gnawing hunger of lonely men for a home and all that it means. For a fireside far from the cares that are, four walls and a roof above, but oh, so crammed full of cozy joy and crowned with a woman's love, a woman dearer than all the world and true as heaven is true. God, how ghastly she looks through her rouge, the lady that's known as Lou. Then, all of a sudden, the music changed. So soft that you could scarcely hear. But you felt your life had been looted clean of all that it once held dear, that someone had stolen the woman you loved, that her love was a devil's lie, that your guts were gone, and the best for you was to crawl away and die. 'Twas the crowning cry of a heart's despair, and it thrilled you through and through. I guess I'll make it a spread, misère, said Dangerous Dan McGrew. Then the music almost died away. Then it burst like a pent-up flood. And that music seemed to say, repay, repay. And my eyes were blind with blood. The thought came back of an ancient wrong. And it stung like a frozen lash. And the lust awoke to kill. Then, the music stopped with a crash. And the stranger turned, and his eyes, they burned in a most peculiar way. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I saw him sway. Then his lips went in a kind of grin, and he spoke, and his voice was calm. "Boys," says he, "boys, you don't know me, and none of you care a damn. But I want to state, and my words are straight, I'll bet my poke they're true, that one of you is a hound of hell. And that one is Dan McGrew." Then I ducked my head, and the lights went out, and two guns blazed in the dark. Two guns blazed in the dark. And a woman screamed, and the lights went up. And two men lay, stiff and stark. Pitched on his head and pumped full of lead was Dangerous Dan McGrew, while the man from the creeks lay clutched to the breast of the lady that's known as Lou. These are the simple facts of the case, and I guess I ought to know. They say that the stranger was crazed with hooch, and I'm not denying it so. I'm not so wise as the lawyer guys, but strictly between us two, the woman that kissed him and pinched his poke was the lady that's known as Lou. Yeah. Hard men living in the Arctic cold with the stars dancing overhead and that haggard moon looking down and that wind whistling out of the north at 50 below. Okay, hold it there. Now, you reset that. If you don't go away, Jim. I got a better one than that. This is WOR New York.
Right now, Bonds is having a semi-annual clearance sale in every department in every Bonds store. Tremendous selections and savings. For the value-minded man, the entire stock of Bonds' own quality-made 89.50 suits, now only $69.90. The entire stock of Bonds' famous two-trouser suits, regularly $109.50 to $114.50, now only $89.90. The entire stock of Bond's own knit sport jackets, regularly $64.50, now only $51.90. The entire stock of shirts, outerwear, sweaters, and pajamas, everything you need to keep warm through the energy crisis, at 15 to 27% off regular price. Special savings on men's shoes, boys, tall and big men. For the Bond's woman, tremendous savings in dresses, coats, and sportswear at a fantastic 25 to 60% off regular price. The Bonds store-wide semi-annual clearance sale on now.
You get more than savings from Bonds.
Reassurance in a changing world. It's wonderful. It's thoroughly uplifting and doesn't cost anything because it doesn't cost anything to walk into Cheers Steakhouse, which is reassuringly the way it's been for 20 years in a wildly changing world. Even after you've had your feast and paid your check, you still don't pay as much as you feel like you should be paying for that treat. For 20 years, Cheers has been indulging intelligent New Yorkers in quality cuisine, traditional hospitality, and gracious service by personnel who care and who know how to care. Cheers Steakhouse. Note the location. 120 West 41st Street. That's on 41st Street between Broadway and 6th Avenue. Dress is casual. Parking is free if you're driving from 5 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Cheers salad dressing is the best salad dressing you're going to taste any place. Call Cheers 244-8810. Cheers 244-8810 at 120 West 41st.
All right, you reset that and listen to this one. If you think the shooting of Dan McGrew is a goodie, wait till you hear this one. This is one of my favorites. This is the work of Robert W. Service. And, man, I mean, in the wintertime, he brings that picture out so clear and clean you can't mistake it for anything else. Now, you all set? You feel the cold blowing out of the north? A dark sky overhead? The midnight sun? Just a few odd moments of daylight here and there? And nothing but you under that arched heaven. I took a contract to bury the body of blasphemous Bill McKay. Whenever, wherever, or whatsoever the manner of death he die, whether he die in the light of day, under a peak-faced moon, in cabin, or dance hall, camp or dive, mucklucks or patent shoon, on velvet tundra or virgin peak, by glacier, drift or draw, in muskeg hollow or canyon gloom, by avalanche, fang or claw, by battle, murder or sudden death, by pestilence, hooch or lead, I swore on the book I would follow and look until I found my tombless dead. For, you know, Bill was a dainty kind of cuss, and his mind was mighty sot on a dinky patch with flowers and grass in a civilized boneyard lot. And where he died or how he died, it didn't matter a damn, as long as he had a grave with frills and a tombstone epigram. So I promised him, and he paid the price in good Chicheco coin, which the very same I blowed in that very night down in the Tenderloin. Then I painted a 3-foot slab of pine. Here lies poor Bill McKay. And I hung it up on my cabin wall, and I waited for Bill to die. Yep, years passed by. Time went on. And at last, one day, came a squaw with a story strange of a long, deserted line of traps way back at the Bighorn Range, of a little hut by the Great Divide, and a white man, stiff and still, lying there by his lonesome self. And I figured it must be Bill. So I thought of the contract that I'd made with him, and I took down from the shelf the swell black box with the silver plate that he'd picked out for himself, and I packed it full of grub and hooch, and I slung it on the sleigh. Then I harnessed up my team of dogs, and I was off at the dawn of day. Oh, yeah, I was off. Do you know what it's like in the Yukon wild when it's 69 below, when the ice worms wriggle their purple heads through the crust of the pale blue snow? When the pine trees crack like little guns in the silence of the wood, and the icicles hang down like tusks under the parka hood, when the stovepipe smoke breaks sudden off and the sky is weirdly lit, yeah, and the careless feel of a bit of steel burns like a red-hot spit, when the mercury is a frozen ball and the frost fiend stalks to kill, well, it was just like that day, that I set out to look for old Bill. Oh, the awful hush that seemed to crush me down on every hand as I blundered, blind, with a trail to find through that blank and bitter land. Half dazed, half crazed in the winter wild with its grim, heartbreaking woes and the ruthless strife for a grip on life that only the sourdough knows. North by the compass, north I pressed, river and peak and plain, passed like a dream. I slept to lose, and I waked to dream again. River and plain and mighty peak, and who could stand unawed as their summits blazed? He could stand undazed at the foot of the throne of God. North, I, north through a land accursed, shunned by the scouring brutes. And all I heard was my own harsh word and the whine of the Malamutes, until at last I came to a cabin, squat, built on the side of a hill. Then I burst in the door, and there on the floor, frozen to death, lay Bill. Ice, white ice, like a winding sheet, sheathing each smoke-grimed wall. Ice on the stovepipe, ice on the bed, ice gleaming over all. Sparkling ice on the dead man's chest, glittering ice in his hair, ice on his fingers, ice in his heart, ice in his glassy stare, hard as a log, and trussed like a frog with his arms and legs outspread. Well, I gazed at the coffin I brought for him, and I gazed at the gruesome dead, and at last I spoke. Bill liked his joke, but still, gol darn his eyes, a man that ought to consider his mates in the ways that he goes and dies. Have you ever stood in an Arctic hut in the shadow of the pole with a little coffin 6x3 and a grief you can't control? Have you ever sat by a frozen corpse that looks at you with a grin and that seems to say, oh, you may try all day, but you'll never jam me in? Well, I'm not a man of the quitting kind, but I never felt so blue. And I sat there gazing at that stiff and studying what I'd do. Then I rose and I kicked off the husky dogs that were nosing round about, and I lit a roaring fire in the stove, and I started to thaw Bill out. Well, I thawed, and I thawed, for 13 days, but it didn't seem no good. His arms and legs stuck out like pegs, as if they was made of wood. Till at last I said, it ain't no use. He's froze. Too hard to thaw. He's obstinate. And he won't lie straight. So I guess I've got to saw. So I sawed off poor old Bill's arms and legs, and I laid him snug and straight in the little coffin he picked himself with the dinky silver plate. And I came nigh to shedding a tear as I nailed him safely down. Then I stowed him away in my Yukon sleigh, and I started back to town. So I buried him, as the contract was, in a narrow grave and deep. And there he's waiting the great cleanup when the judgment sluice heads sweep. And I smoke my pipe, and I meditate in the light of the midnight sun. And you know, sometimes I wonder if they was the awful things I done. And as I sit and the parson talks, expounding of the law, I often think of poor old Bill and how hard he was to saw. Now, all right, you think that's something. Are you enjoying these? There's something about these things. They really get you. You just can't fight them. Here's one you haven't heard in a long time. If you've heard this, this is one of his rarer ones. And it's full of wild imagery. It's the Ballad of One-Eyed Mike. This is the tale that was told to me by the man with the crystal eye. Isn't that a great image? The man with the crystal eye. As I smoke my pipe and the campfire light and the glories swept the sky. Now, when he's speaking of glories, you know what he's talking about? He's talking about the northern lights. And if you've ever been up in the northern area, way up in the Yukon, in fact, we used to see them in northern Indiana. You see them in Minnesota, even the middle of summer, you know. The northern lights. Have you ever seen them, Jerry? You've never seen them, have you? Well, let me describe to you what the northern lights look like. When you first see them, you have a feeling that there's some kind of... Well, it's hard to pinpoint them. They seem to move across the sky and flicker up and down in sort of a vast curtain of light. like smoke. It's light that looks like a smoky light. In fact, it looks like it might even be smoke with possibly moonlight behind it. They just sort of flicker across the sky. And then you look at them, you say, I didn't really see that. And then they'll flicker again. And the further north you go, the more vivid they are. Until when you get up into a place like the far northern part of Minnesota, they look like 1,000 searchlights off in the distance, searching the sky. If you've ever seen an air raid, that's what it looks like. It looks like searchlights searching up in the sky, and you can see those lights playing high up. And you can even see the images of stars through them. They're spectacular. So he refers to those often in many different ways. So when he says... here, I'll give you an example of that. This is the tale that was told to me by the man with the crystal eye. As I smoked my pipe in the campfire light, and the glories swept the sky, as the north lights gleamed and curved and streamed, and the bottle of hooch was dry. You see? He's sitting there in the north in this great northern lights playing overhead. And this is the story that he was told. A man once aimed that my life be shamed, and he wrought me a deadly, deathly wrong. I vowed one day I would well repay, but the heft of his hate was strong. He thronged me east, and he thronged me west. He harried me back and forth, till I fled in fright from his peerless spite to the bleak, bald-headed north. And there I lay. For many a day I hatched plan after plan for a golden hall of the wherewithal to crush and to kill my man. And there I strove. And there I clove through the drift of icy streams. And there I fought. And there I sought for the pay streak of my dreams. So 20 years, with their hopes and fears and smiles and tears and such, went by and left me long bereft of hope of the Midas touch. About as fat as a chancel rat. And lo, despite my will, in the weary fight, I had clean lost sight of the man I sought to kill. 'Twas so far away, that evil day when I prayed the Prince of Gloom for the savage strength and the solemn length of life to work his doom. By the way, this is a great classic poem about hate, about a guy that wants to kill somebody. Haven't you been following this poem? Listen carefully. He's up in the north. He's trying to get money. He's trying to hit a pay dirt, and he finally gave up. He's not going to make it. He gave up looking for this Midas run of gold, and it was so far away, that evil day when I prayed the Prince of Gloom. Who's the Prince of Gloom? The devil. He prayed to the devil for the savage strength and the sullen length of life to work his doom. Nor sign nor word had I seen or heard. And it happened so long ago, my youth was gone and my memory wan, and I willed it even so. It fell one night in the waning light by the Yukon's oily glow. I smoked and sat as I marveled at the sky's port wine glow, till it paled away to an absinthe gray, and the river seemed to shrink, all wobbly flakes and wiggering snakes and goblin eyes a wink. Great description of a river. All wobbly flakes and wriggling snakes and a goblin eyes a wink. 'Twas weird to see, and it bewildered me in a queer hypnotic dream, till I saw a spot like an inky blot come floating down the stream. It bobbed and swung and sheered and hung. It romped around in a ring. It seemed to play in a tricksome way. Sure was a merry thing. In freakish flights, strange oily lights came fluttering around its head like butterflies of a monster size. And then I knew it for the dead. Its face was rubbed and slicked and scrubbed as smooth as a shaven pate. In the silver snakes that water makes, it gleamed like a dinner plate. It gurgled near and clear and clear, and large it grew. It stood upright in a ring of light and looked me through and through. It weltered round with a woozy sound, and before I could retreat, with a witless roll of a sodden soul, it wantoned and floated to my feet. And here I swear by the cross I wear, I heard that floater, that body, that stiff say, I am the man from whom you ran. The man you sought to slay, that you may note and gaze and gloat and say, revenge is sweet. In the grit and grime of the river slime, I am rotting at your feet. The ill we rue, we must undo, though it rive us bone to bone. So it came about that I sought you out, and I prayed that I might atone. I did you wrong. For long and long I sought where you might live, and now you're found. Though I'm dead and drowned, I beg you to forgive. So sad it seemed, and its cheekbones gleamed, and its fingers flicked the shore, and it lapped and lay in a weary way, and its hands met to implore. Then I gently said, poor restless soul, I would never work you woe, though the wrong you rue, you can never undo. I forgave you long ago. And then, wonder-wise, I rubbed my eyes and I woke from a horrid dream. The moon rode high in the naked sky, and something bobbed in the stream. It held my sight in a patch of light, and then it sheered from the shore. It dipped and sank by a hollow bank, and I never saw it more. As this was the tale he told to me, that man so warped and gray. Ere he slept and dreamed, and the campfire gleamed in his eye in a wolfish way. The crystal eye that raked the sky in the weird auroral ray. Fine. Now, isn't that fantastic? He had a dream that he saw this corpse floating down the river. Wow. And you know what he means by a crystal eye? Yes, that's a glass eye. That's the man with the crystal eye. Now, I'm going to give you, if I have time, I don't know whether I have time here or not. Let's see. One of my favorites here is a great piece of work. Well, here, listen to this one. Wait a minute. The Ballad of the Black Fox Skin. Did you ever hear that one? Well, I'll at least read you the opening of that one, because this, if you're wondering what all this is about, this is one of my favorite poems. And I think one day, poets rather, I think one day he is going to have a fantastic revival. People are going to re-look at this guy's work and study it, because it has a certain... Listen to the opening of this one now. All kinds of curious allusions in his work, and you have to know what he's talking about to get half of his... Listen to this one now. This is called The Ballad of the Black Fox Skin. Yep. Yep, friends. There was Claw-Fingered Kitty. What a great name, Claw-Fingered Kitty. There was Claw-Fingered Kitty and Windy Ike living the life of shame. Here's a great pair. When unto them in the long, long night... Now, what he means by the long, long night, of course, is up in the northern climates, they don't have any day at all. This is the dead of winter. When unto them in the long, long night came the man who had no name, bearing his prize of a black fox pelt, out of the wild he came. His cheeks were blanched as the flume head foam. Flume head foam is that white foam that comes when you're mining and you're washing down gold. His cheeks were blanched as the flume head foam when the brown spring freshets flow, deep in their dark sin calcined pits were his somber eyes aglow. They knew him from afar for the fitful man who spat forth blood on the snow. Did you ever see such a skin? Quoth he. Oh, look at that skin. There's naught in the world so fine, such fullness of fur, as black as the night, such luster, such size, such shine. Oh, it's life to a one-lunged man like me. It's London, it's women, it's wine. Oh, the moose hides, the Indians call it the devil fox, and swore that no man could kill him. that he who hunted it, soon or late, must surely suffer some fate. But I laughed at them and their old squaw tails, and I'm laughing still. For look at the skin. It's as smooth as sin and black as the core of the pit. By gun or by trap, whatever the hap, I swore I'd capture it. By star, afield and afar, I hunted, and I would not quit. Oh, for the devil fox, it was swift and sly, and it seemed to leer at me. I'd wake in fright by the campfire light, hearing its evil glee. Into my dream, its eyes would gleam, and its shadow would I see. It sniffed, and it ran from the ptarmigan I'd poisoned. Unarmed and unharmed, it sped from my wrathful lead. It was fantastic. It was like I shot by guess. Yet it came by night in the stark moonlight to mock at my weariness. Oh. I tracked it up where the mountains hunch like the vertebrae of the world. I tracked it down to the death-still pits where the avalanche is hurled, from the glooms to the sacerdotal snows where the carded clouds are curled. Yes, I tracked that evil death fox. I tracked him down, and now I have his lustrous black skin. What a fantastic story. I wish I could read the rest of that to you. How he caught it. That's more exciting than an episode of Canon, isn't it? Yeah, Claw-Fingered Kitty and Windy Ike, bad as the worst they were. Oh. In their roadhouse down by the river trail, they waited and watched for prey. With wine and song, they joyed night long, and they slept like swine by day. Oh, yeah. I like them sleeping like swine, drinking their wine and yelling all night. So that concludes tonight's salute to Claw-Fingered Kitty and Windy Ike, who are living the life of shame. New York. Next, John Wingate and Nightbeat.